This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over Beastly. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Are you ready?
For One Dry Kiss.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where in the month of October, we cover one supernatural paranormal sweeties movie. Today, we are doing Beastly. Arrar. And I am here with my co-host who would not kidnap me and try and make me fall in love with her, Miss Tamara Cosio.
And I am here with the Cogsworth to my Lumiere, Corinne, because we're doing Beastly, and it's kind of like Beauty and the Beast. And the first Beauty and the Beast movie I think of when I think of that is the Disney one.
Yes!
There's no Cogsworth or Lumiere in this one, though, unfortunately.
So, no.
Hate to disappoint.
Is Cogsworth the clock?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I've seen it like one
you
time.
You are the clock, and I am the hot waxed candle, the candelabra that is so into romance and intrigue.
Is the clock all and kind of clock. Like Freddy and like worries about things?
Yeah.
Great. Thanks. Thanks a lot, Tam.
I would say you're somebody else, but those are the only characters that I recognize in this first scroll down. The stove. You could be the stove, but it's listed on IMDb as the stove. Or there's also the prolific part of the wardrobe. So see?
Uh-huh.
I'm giving you a kitchen utensil or a thing that has an actual name.
Great. Thanks.
I didn't think you'd be Pitch. Chip, I didn't want to be Mrs. Potts. Okay, fine. Not my best call out for my co-host. I admit it. And I'm sorry.
No, you're not, but it's okay.
No, I'm not.
So, gentle listeners, I have to tell you that, one, it's my birthday month, and all very mm-hmm. exciting, because remember this month, if you rate and review us with 5 stars, you get a sticker. It's limited edition. It's handcrafted by Miss Tamara Cosio, and it looks super profesh, though. It's not like she just scribbled the word One Dry Kiss onto a sticky note name tag or something like that.
And even if I did, it would still look good.
Yes, because Tamara's writing is divine.
Mm-hmm.
And along that line of things, I was surprised today by Miss Tamara when what happened? I got a package delivered to me, but it wasn't for me. It was for Tamara.
Okay, there's a story behind that, see? I wanted to surprise Corinne with some cupcakes for her birthday.
Which she did.
Tomorrow is her birthday.
Yes.
Which I did. But I didn't know if she was going to be taking the day off, so I really wanted to super sneaky surprise her. I called the place. I DoorDashed some cupcakes to her. And on the DoorDash instructions, I was very thorough, like, it's a surprise. Her name's Corinne. It's her birthday. She doesn't know these are coming. La-da-la-da. Like, put, like, all kinds of special instructions. She's the receptionist or the person that's at the front. If you could just walk in, blah. And so I had, like, this itinerary that I was, like, writing down. And I wanted to, like, have her pause for a moment wondering who sent these to her. So I signed it Wonder Woman, even in the little gift receipt tag that they said that I should fill out, which I don't even know if you got that.
Nope, did not get that.
Yeah. Well, so all of that was for nothing, because when Corinne texted me when she received the cupcake, she's like, hey, did you accidentally send me cupcakes that were supposed to go to you or send them to the wrong place? And I was like, I was like, no, it was Wonder Woman. She goes, really? Because your name's like written in Sharpie in like 2-inch letters across the side of the box. And I was like, fuck. I was like, oh, okay. At first I was like really disappointed and kind of upset. And I was like, oh, see here, I was telling the DoorDash person all the details about the secrecy and it's a surprise, but I didn't tell the actual bakery that took the order and saw fit to put my name in large letters across the side of said box.
But so. two things. One, it was Tamara C. So The plot thickens because before I got the cupcake delivery, there was another delivery person who came to the door who was looking for someone. It was not me. It wasn't anybody in the office, but it was at that address. But the person was like, I'll be there in 4 minutes. Wait for me. And so they waited outside. And then this person drove by out front of the office in a Tesla, stuck her hand out the window, got the delivery, parked up the street, and then she came in for an appointment with the other person who works out of our office.
So that's some baller shit right there.
So when I got these cupcakes, I was like, is the person in the other office, like, is that person's name Tamara C? And it's just this wacky coincidence? I do not know, because the person who delivered the cupcakes to me did not say a word, seemed to have limited English, and didn't convey anything to me at all other than just kind of shoving the cupcakes towards me. So
so you thought it was Tamara Tesla going up the street and like, oh shit, I got my order but I forgot my cupcakes, goddamn. And I sadly am sad that I tipped that guy so much, so I'm like, I'm being super like with all my details, so I gave him like a very good tip. And he was just like, here's your cupcakes. Have a nice day.
He wasn't even that. It was just, yeah. Okay, thank you.
No, you want the other lady that's up the street in her Tesla. Just hold him out to the road and she'll pass by and grab him. You've come to the wrong place.
Oh, so I was confused. But anyways, it brightened my day because I've been a little bit sad because I get sad around my birthday because my sister always made it really special for me. And she is no longer in this mortal coil. She didn't just go out for cigarettes. She hates smoking. Mm. And so I've been having a little bit of a hard time. And getting those cupcakes cheered me up. Did not keep me from crying intermittently throughout the day, but still.
I'm so glad I got the backstory, though, because when you texted me, I'm like, how many other friends do you have named Tamara? It is the day before your birthday, Corinne. Like, I figured you'd at least put two and two.
I didn't want to be like halfway into a cupcake when the person comes out of the office and it's like, are you eating my cupcakes? My name's Tamara.
Look, bitch.
I'm like, you have a Tesla. You can afford all the cupcakes you want.
You should have just lied. My name's Tamara, too. I thought they were for me. You're not the only Tamara around here that gets cupcakes, okay?
I ate a cupcake in front of Tamara, so I did my duty.
Yes. She named the cupcake. She told me its backstory.
Yes.
She ate it in front of me, which was like, sweetly morbid, I guess. Kind of like this movie.
Yes. So thank you for the lovely cupcakes. They brightened my day.
Welcome.
And it was a nice amount of them too. It wasn't like the other guy who works out of the office. He likes to go really over the top with gifts. And so like he would get me a dozen cupcakes or something like that. And I'd be like, what am I supposed to do with a dozen cupcakes? I don't know.
You realize there's only one of me, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Just checking.
Yeah. So I would like to give a special shout out to Tamara for brightening my day and sending me cupcakes. Thank you. Love you.
Oh, damn it. Those were supposed to get sent to me.
I knew it because on the label it said two and it said Tamara C. And I was like,
yeah.
Did she mean to send herself cupcakes and sent it to the wrong place? Customer?
The wrong side of the state, the wrong city, to the wrong person. Didn't you see me and feel me glaring at you hard when you ate that cupcake in front of me? And I was like, that should have been my fucking cupcake right there, goddammit. That s'mores one had my name all over it, literally.
You're like video chatting me and you're all, hey, guess what? I ordered some cupcakes for your birthday. They're really delicious.
Or I'll just watch you eat the scrumptious cupcakes that I was supposed to get and just like draw little sad cupcakes on a piece of paper and just show it to you before crumpling it up and putting it in my mouth and pretending like it's just as good. Corinne, why did you pick Beastly? just out of curiosity, because this was your pick this week.
It was, because it was a paranormal romance. Also, it was somewhat diverse in nature, which was good. It was very difficult to find paranormal, supernatural paranormal sweetie movies that were diverse. There were,
yes,
like,
we've already established we're not watching The Vampire in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Well, you've established you're not watching A Vampire in Brooklyn. You're like, if you want to, have at it. But I could not even get through that thing once.
Yeah, no, I was like, it's just boring. But if you want to script it out, I will watch it all the way through for you. Not a problem. And Tamara's
Not good. Not good.
I was debating between this movie and Joyful Noise, which is a very diverse movie and has Queen Latifah in it and Kiki Palmer. We love them. But the supernatural, paranormal, sweetie portion of it is Dolly Parton singing an original song and dancing with the ghost of her dead husband.
That's a stretch.
And Tamara gave me shit about that. And so I was like, fine. I'll do Beastly.
You can do Joyful Noise like in so many other months.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can do it in so many other months. And Beastly was streaming on Paramount Plus, and Joyful Noise was not streaming anywhere for free. So I went for what was streaming. And I saw this originally in the theater. And I think I actually liked it better when I watched it this time than I did when I originally saw it. That having been said, and I saw it originally because Mary-Kate Olsen is in it, and I'm an Olsen Twins fan. So, yes. I also had a lot of very conflicted feelings about this movie, watching it as an adult person. So
you and me, ball sister.
So I'm very excited to talk about it because I'm like, I don't even know where this is going to end up going. Speaking of which, Tamara, do you have a tremendous synopsis for us of Beastly?
I do. Truth. I do. I'm trying to think of other affirmative words that start with T. That's the only one I could come up with. Toot sweet.
Yeah. Ta-ta. Ta-tas.
Ta-tas. Ta-ta. That's positive. It sure is.
Yeah.
Ta-tas, Corinne. Synopsis. Have you seen Beauty and the Beast? Well, this is the high school version of it. The end.
Yay! That's like my synopsis last time. It's perfect.
I'm just kidding. Let me expand. A prick by the name of Kyle, played by Alex Pettyfer, knows he looks good and uses his attractiveness to justify his assholiness and get what he wants. And even though he's ugly on the inside, he still manages to catch the eye of Lindy, played by Vanessa Hudgens, who's a free-spirited gal that appreciates his candidness and is 100% totally not attracted to his looks. Absolutely not at all.
No!
But nothing comes out of that because Kyle ticks off a witch named Kendra, played by Mary-Kate Olsen, who casts a spell on him, making his outward appearance as unattractive as his inner self. He has 1 year to find someone to love his beastly form or stay ugly forever.
Dun, 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 dun.
Kyle lives in a sort of exile until a series of events, crime and blackmail, land Lindy at his place to stay. For protection, though. It's totally just for protection.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Kyle must attempt to get Lindy to fall in love with his new super edgy scar tatted face look before it's too late. Will Lindy see into Kyle's new soft squishy heart and utter those three magic little words? Will Kyle run out of time, embrace his new form, and become the next tatted faced rap singing sensation?
Ooh.
Find out with this as we explore the supernatural love that is Beastly. Oh, Corinne.
Yes.
Corinne.
Yes.
Shall we jump into the beastly pond?
Absolutely. And that was an excellent synopsis, Miss Tamara.
Thank you. Ta-ta.
Ta-tas. And this first section I label Alex is a special piece of shit.
Ah. Who's Alex?
Oh, shit. Kyle. Kyle is Alex Pettyfer. That's his real name. I do not actually know anything about the actor personally.
I was gonna say, wow, do you have some beef with Alex? You are obviously not a fan, Corinne.
Look, he stood me up on a date. I don't want to talk about it. Maybe it wasn't actually him, and maybe it was somebody pretending to be him, but I really, oh, that's why it was spelled pretty for instead of petty for. Oh.
It's all coming together.
I think that I may have been catfish.
Catfish?
Shit. Hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Alex, we're taking it back. We'll just talk shit about Kyle for this first segment till we can verify whether or not you're a dick.
Call me Alex. Call me. So, Kyle is a special piece of shit. Oh, hello. This is unexpected. A very hot blonde guy with muscles on muscles in some black boxer briefs does push-ups and pull-ups and flexes and looks in the mirror with a, oh yeah, you're looking good today, and finger guns himself. And then, whoosh, record scratch, we find out he's a high schooler. Ew. Adult? First, no. Kyle Kingston, who is running for Green Committee president. Just when I'm about ready to go, ew, I just ogled a high schooler. I looked him up, and gentle listeners, in real life, he is at least 20 during the filming of this. And that explains why he looks like more of a man than a high schooler. Also,
thank God.
Yes. He's about to get real ugly real soon. Basically, as soon as he opens his mouth. So,
fair.
Yeah. Kyle stands at a podium surrounded by a very excited student body. They're all holding up life-size cutout pictures of his face. And Kyle gives a rousing speech. Are you an uggo? Hatchet face? Face like a burnt Lego? Well, best embrace the suck. Beautiful people have it better. The crowd cheers enthusiastically. But a singular goth-looking girl stands glaring at him in the crowd. She is not impressed. Kyle continues charismatically. You're not going to elect me because I care about the environment, because I don't. I'm not doing this to exact change, because he's running for Green Club president.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing this to exact change. I'm doing this for my college transcript. But what you've got to ask yourself is, should you vote for me because I'm the rich, popular, good-looking guy with the famous news anchor dad? And the answer is hell yeah. The crowd bursts into wild applause, and the goth exits the room with an icy glare in his direction. Kyle catches the glare, pauses a beat, and then slaps a bigger smile on his face, pumping up the crowd even more.
Oh, Lord. So, this looks like a very posh, upscale, private high school.
Yeah.
And I really doubt that the faculty or the students would be as vapid and, like, substanceless as these people and as we're led to believe from this movie. First of all, I would not vote for this guy. I would not cheer for him. I'd be like, fuck you very much. Who's the other candidate? Okay, I'm writing somebody in. Freaking the mascot. It should be the Green Committee president besides this guy.
I have one word for you.
Mm-hmm.
Trump.
What about him?
He was singularly unqualified, made fun of people, and he was not extraordinarily attractive, but he had a very much us versus them kind of mentality, and he has all of these people who love and adore him in spite of the fact that he has done some before becoming president and during presidency and after presidency has done some verifiably really terrible things as a human being.
Yes.
So.
Oh, yeah.
You just look at that and the support that the senators in his party and the House in his party have for him still. And there's your answer.
No, I still like everybody that's, especially now that is a super fly Trump supporter and fan. I'm kind of like, I question a lot if somebody is still behind him like 100% and been like, he's awesome. He's amazing. And I'd be like, go stand over here.
Right. But it's all about the power structure and like the senators, the Republican senators and the Republican House of Representative people are all like firmly in his camp. Very supportive. Very like almost nobody speaks out against him in his party. And it's the same thing here.
Yeah, but he's saying, like, fuck all you uggos, and it's, like, at least I shudder that I'm, like, putting him in a different category, but I know Trump was like, we need to change things. Things have been fucked up, and you always, like, vote in the same type of person that doesn't do anything, and I'm different. So he was kind of like, I don't even want to get into the politics. Like, I just want to stop talking about Donald Trump. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I really do. But I'm saying, like, he was blatantly like, you guys are ugly. I'm handsome. I'm not going to do shit. I'm just doing this for the benefit of myself. So vote for me because, you know, I'm awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But then it's like, okay, granted, I could see some people would be on the fucking Kyle train, but I think more people would be like, who the fuck does this guy think he is than they showed? Oh, almost got me fucking telling the merits of Donald Trump's political agenda. What the fuck? Anyways, sorry I even said that. Jesus. Later that day, Kyle's walking down the hall and he sees several of his posters have been graffitied over. That across them and across his face are written, don't embrace the suck, including one that has classed up his looks with a bigger brow and a Van Dyke mustache. And Goth Girl, played by Mary-Kate Olsen, is standing next to them wielding a giant marker in her hand. She looks over at Kyle and says slyly, maybe it's just me, but shouldn't the person who runs the Green Committee actually care about the environment? Kyle walks over to her and cockily says, or be green like the rest of your facially disabled coven. Goth Girl smiles smugly. You know the only reason why Lindy is running for treasurer instead of president is because she doesn't think she can compete with your popularity. Lindy, played by Vanessa Hudgens, who's standing off to the side, shakes her head and quickly tries refuting this, but Goth Girl does not have time for her protestations. But I think we're all really hoping that in the privacy of the voting booth, all your bandwagoneers will stop fearing for their social lives and do the right thing. Goth Girl walks off and Kyle approaches Lindy saying, nice try at a smear campaign with your little witchy friend. Lindy confidently smiles and bites back. Let me be clear. I don't want president. I don't know Kendra, aka Goth Girl, and I don't let others speak for me. But hey, maybe that's just a scholarship kid in me, so good luck tomorrow and it's nice to meet you after 3 years. She holds up her hand to a stunned Kyle, and he eventually shakes it, and they part ways. And he is, dare I say it, intrigued?
Ooh, yes, he is intrigued. And just for reference, which it took me a while to pick up on all of this, I'm sure that all of you have already picked up on this, but this is spring of their junior year, and it's for... the Green Club president when their senior year at the beginning of the school year.
Oh, gosh. See, I thought that was so clear. Like, I thought it was so clearly outlined in what we covered already. Like, but thank you for, you know, telling it to the people in the back that aren't as on top of things as us.
I wasn't on top of it. So I'm glad that you were, though.
I was not. I was being a smart ass. So I'm like, how the fuck would anybody know that, Corinne?
Well, you know, you eventually kind of put it together, but it takes a while. So, yeah, my brain hamster had like the cork board out and was trying to put red string all over the place and got lost for a while in the string, I got to say. Tangled, even. Mm-hmm. That evening, when Kyle is back at home, he tries talking to his dad when his dad gets home. But okay. His dad is distracted and on the phone with somebody else. Eventually, when Kyle says something outrageous, his dad realizes the error of his ways and gets off the phone apologizing to Kyle. Sorry, Jill got canned. Probably that extra baby 10, you know. Let's face it, people like people who look good. And if they say otherwise, they're likely dumb or ugly. Kyle asks, who's Jill? His dad says, you know, I told you about her. And Kyle says, no, I don't know. The last time you've had a longer than 5 minute conversation with me was sophomore year when I told you I had brain cancer. His dad is dismissive and wandering around the kitchen gathering food for himself. Kyle texts his dad, who he's still in the same room with, but his dad who is not engaging with him. Thanks, Dad.
Question before you go on.
Yes.
He didn't really have brain cancer, right? It was just a ploy to get attention from his dad.
Yes.
Okay. Second thing is, his dad always talks about people like people who look good. His dad is about as attractive as a cardboard box. Like, he is just so plain and so, like, I don't think I'd give you a second glance on a street if there was only me and you on the street. So it kind of baffles me that his dad has this, like, pretty people are the best mentality, when I'm like, are you faking it till you make it? I don't get it.
And she's talking about the actor Peter Krause, right, who was one of the stars of 6 Feet Under and Sports Night, and is currently one of the stars of the Fox series 9-1-1.
And I'm not saying he's not, like, conventionally attractive, I guess. I just don't think he's anything, like, special enough to be talking like this.
He is no Alex Pettyfer, that is for sure.
Yes, I will agree with you on that one.
Yeah, no, he is good looking, but Tam, I think, is totally spot on. If he were to rob a bank, people would be like, oh, you know, he's like 5'10", 6 foot, brown hair, brown eyes, you know, and they'd be like, white, and they'd be like, okay.
Have you ever seen the movie Can't Hardly Wait at the end, where there's this guy that has a crush on a girl and she's trying to find him and asking everybody for descriptions of him? The guy's named Preston. They're like, oh yeah, Preston, he's kind of tall, but not super tall. And he, like, wears shirts sometimes. Yeah, sometimes he wears shirts. And yeah, you know, he's like, he's cool.
Yeah.
So she was just, like, asking around. Everybody just kept, like, giving her these nothing types of descriptions. And I feel like Dad would get a lot of these, too, even being the anchorman that he supposedly is.
Yeah. He's generally attractive, but would blend into a crowd.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas Alex Pettyfer would be like, oh.
I know, like, dear Greek God, where'd you come from?
He's got this, like, blonde, sort of, like, short but wavy hair, you know, and it kind of just, like, when he laughs, it just bounces a little, and then he has this little twinkle in his eyes, you know, but not that I was paying attention or anything. It's fine.
I was like, you got that in the first 2 minutes of the movie? Impressive, Corinne.
Oh, so yes. Kyle texts his dad, had student elections, number two, day. Dad reads it and asks, hey, how'd it go? And Kyle is about to tell him when his dad gets another call. Hold that thought. He answers the phone. Go for Rob, and walks out of the room. Kyle looks over his shoulder at the staircase and sees their house cleaner, Zola, and snaps at her. What? Zola calmly responds, nothing, and starts heading down the steps. I'm just saying good night. And Kyle responds, have a nice evening, Zola. Thanks for all your help. Yeah. He's true to form, an asshole through and through. He responds, why? Because you need to get home to your 16 children? Zola smiles at this. I have 3 kids and they live in Jamaica with their father. You know that. Kyle gets up, walking past her towards the stairs, and says, save your sob stories for Mr. Clean. He starts heading up the stairs and Zola laughs, pointing her finger at him. You don't vex me, you stoosh jinny gog. Which is an actual Jamaican saying, basically, asshole.
I sincerely hate sometimes when you inject those, he said thanks and have a good evening, and they're like, pause. I'm like, wait, do I need to go back and watch it? I completely do not remember that. Like, he was a complete dick to her. Oh, shit, now I gotta find that spot to see, like, because I completely, and then I'm like, oh, you're just kidding. He just gave me, like, 4 seconds of anxiety. And I was like, huh, huh, huh.
How did I miss that?
Yes.
You did that to me, like, a movie or two back, and I had the same feel. I was like, wait, what happened?
Oh, so we do it to each other. I guess it's okay then.
I do it more frequently, I will admit. Yes.
Oh, you do. Yeah, you definitely do. Yeah. Yes. Back at school, Kyle has won Green President. And when he sees goth girl Kendra, he approaches her smoothly, saying, just want you to know, no hard feelings about what you did to my posters. You had a point and I want to make it up to you. I have 2 tickets to the Green Dance. Do you want to go? Kendra eyes him suspiciously. What's the catch? Kyle smiles charmingly. No catch. Just want a new start with you. She smiles at him. Okay. I don't know what your game is, but I'll play. Just remember, don't mess with a witch. She walks off, and I'm wondering what kind of Carrie Pig's Blood prom bullshit he has planned. Because you know that is not a genuine invitation.
Uh-huh. Seriously.
At the green dance, Kyle's girlfriend storms off in a huff. In a huff! Because Kyle hadn't brought her an orchid for a corsage.
Aww.
And they're only the yellow ribbon of the dance. Apparently, he wants her to look like a bitch, or so she says, because he gave her a measly little white rose, a symbol of humility, loyalty, and that you're worthy of the person that you're with, as if. So at least now Kyle doesn't have to worry about juggling his girlfriend with his faux date, Kendra. Yay.
Yay.
Lindy, who is working the event to make some extra money to help pay for the school trip to Machu Picchu, is putting candles on tables nearby, and Kyle approaches her. Does it suck so bad? Lindy glances at him and says, no. She turns her back to him, moving to another table, rolls her eyes, and says sarcastically, it's badass. She continues placing candles on tables, and he asks her, did I ever congratulate you on Treasurer? I should also apologize for my behavior earlier. Lindy scoffs. 2 weeks ago was the first and last time you talked to me in 3 years, so no. He apologizes and then begins making small talk and seems intrigued that she's so semi-dismissive of him. She lets him know that she's almost done with her shift but won't be sticking around because this dance isn't really her thing, and says, what can I say? I'm substance over style. He smiles, a dying breed. And she responds, it's never too late to join. There's always hope. But he admits he's very much style. She smirks at him and says, well, take a picture with me. He's confused until a newspaper guy from out of nowhere pops up in front of him with a camera. Kyle positions himself next to Lindy and tells the photographer, I'm going to need to approve these before they run. He takes the white rose and pins it onto Lindy's dress, and she stares into his eyes saying, I'm worthy of you. He has another what moment, and she quickly recovers. A white rose. That's what it means. I'm worthy of you. It's lame core, I know, and obviously not what I thought you meant. They turn towards the camera, and he looks at her with heart eyes, forgetting himself for a moment. The camera flashes, and he quickly regains his Aeolian attitude, leaving Lindy and moving on to goth girl Kendra. Her hair is close to Gary Oldman's hair in the movie Dracula, except not receding halfway to the back of her head. But Mary-Kate and her sis are notorious for making unusual fashion choices work, so yes. Maybe she could look good with a goth receding hairline. We'll never know, though. Kendra's dressed in all black and seems to have the smokiest of smoky eyes that would rival a California forest fire in the summer for the occasion.
Oh.
And Kyle announces to the room of people, ostensibly talking to Kendra, but really talking to everybody else, did you really think I'd go out with you? Wow, I can't believe you bought it. You caused a scene and almost cost me the election. There's no way I'd go out with a tattooed freak like you.
Oof.
He says, referring to the tattoo on the side of her face that's in the shape of a crescent moon and is really quite tasteful, I think, compared to the tattooed faces people are putting on today.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you can't really put on a tattooed face compared to the tattoo people are putting on their face today.
Yeah, Mike Tyson, she is not.
No, it's like a demure Mike Tyson, a dainty, demure Mike Tyson, scaled down about 6 times.
If Mike Tyson went to a tea party and got his tattoo done under the full moonlight by a Wiccan goddess.
Fairy.
By fairy. A Wiccan fairy, yeah, fairy. That is what the tattoo, his face tattoo would look like then. But not, no. Yeah.
Very great, great description, Corinne. Great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. Kyle continues. Que sera sera. Spanish for sucks to be an ugly cow. And we here at One Dry Kiss can affirm that that's not what que sera sera means, nor is it actually Spanish. But Kendra doesn't argue semantics with him. She instead coolly states, I only came to give you a second chance. He cockily responds, guess I blew it. He starts walking away when she calls out to him. But Kyle, he turns around and she continues, best embrace the suck. Suddenly, his world spins a bit around him and he feels a little uneasy as she slyly smiles at him.
Ooh. I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole with the whole que sera sera thing.
I appreciate that.
I know this surprises you to no end, but basically it's kind of an English word because it's sort of a made up word. Mm-hmm. If it were to be Spanish, there would be other words involved, and it's closer to Italian, but it's not because of like the spelling and stuff like that. So yeah, it was popularized by the Que sera, sera song.
Sera,
yeah.
Whatever will be.
And mm-hmm. yeah, so it's an English word. It's because it's made up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Weren't we just talking about made up words?
Yeah. I had no idea it was going to be such an adventure.
Thank you for going down that rabbit hole for all of us, Karen. We are the better for it.
Uh-huh. The more you know, bring. This has been one of Corinne's The More You Know moments. So Kyle tries to enjoy the dance, but he ends up panicking and leaving. Once he gets outside, he's seen things and is... Oh, and by the way, his girlfriend totally forgave him like 5 hours ago, okay? It's all totally fine. Why aren't you dancing?
Oh, his girlfriend is also played by Dakota Johnson.
Yeah. So Kyle ditches his girlfriend on the dance floor. Once he gets outside, he's seen things and is disoriented. He eventually makes it home and goes onto the rooftop for some fresh air. However, much to his surprise, Kendra is on the roof. She interrupts his rooftop reverie by asking, "How you feeling, Kyle?" He asks, "What are you doing here?" She responds, "I'm here for everyone who just missed the beauty boat," referring to part of his riveting candidate speech, "and all of the self-mutilating, tatted Frankenskinks." He defends himself. "It was a joke." She approaches him and she looks way less goth. The face tattoo is gone. Her hair is down, and instead of going heavy on the eyeliner and having blotted out lips, because her lips, when she is like in the school hallways and at the dance and everything like that, they basically match the complexion of her face, which is very white. But in this scene, she's got more of a natural look with a soft red lip color. She responds to his joke comment with, "I didn't get it." She grabs his hand and continues, "But pretty soon you will. You have a year to find someone to love you before the tree blooms again." A tree tattoo spirals and forms with the trunk and root system on the palm of his hand and the top of the tree on the inside of his forearm. Some small flowers appear on the tree and then swiftly disappear. She continues, "When the tree blooms again, either the words, 'I love you,' will release you from the spell, or," she whispers threateningly, "you'll stay like this forever." Kyle is scared and confused. "Like what?" She smiles slyly and brings Kyle to a window so he can see his reflection. He has gone from looking like a blonde Ken doll to being a very bald person with tattoos and scarring across his face and head. I don't know, how would you describe? He's got this like little outcroppings of dimensional things on his face, like ridges.
Yeah. He's got ridges. He's got like a bulbous little cluster of warts right next to his nose by the nostrils. He's got like gashes, like visible gashes that are probably like a couple of centimeters deep, if not more. And then he's got like all kinds of black, trendily tattoos of just like dead trees all across his face, body, and arms.
Yeah.
And that stinky metallic piercing thing. It's like how people get septum piercings, but it's up like somebody really missed.
On the bridge of his nose.
Yeah. They just tried to get a septum piercing and somebody sneezed and it wound up right between his eyes. But then it kind of like snakes up because it's almost like a elongated piece. It's not just like a little tiny,
yeah,
like nub. It's a big honking, like it's a statement piece.
It is a statement piece. It is dimensional, and it kind of ties into the sweeping tree limbs that he has sort of tattooed across the top of his head. And right. Thank you so much, Tam. I knew you would be better at describing his look than I would. So
also no eyebrows. And in place of his eyebrows, it says embrace over one eye and suck over the other one.
Oh, is that what it was? I just thought it was some like kind of gibberish. Oh my gosh, you're my hero. How long did you pause it to find out that?
I figured it out like halfway through the movie because I'm like, I thought the same thing. I'm like, what is that? Is that like Arabic?
Yeah.
It like looks so crazy. What are those letters? Embrace. Oh, okay. Okay. Because he says embrace the suck. Got it. Oh, Kendra, you wicked, wicked witch.
Kendra explains, now you're as aggressively unattractive on the outside as you are on the inside. And she disappears.
It's so funny, too, because when I saw him, I'm like, oh, okay, yes, he looks remarkably different. But sometimes people might, like, stylistically choose to do what she did to him.
Yeah.
So. That's going to come up later.
But he would never choose to do.
No, he would not. No. Not him, but some might.
Yes.
In different scenarios and situations. Anyhow. Kyle changes into a black hoodie, turns out the lights in their opulent apartment, and waits for his dad to come home. When he does, Kyle asks his dad from the middle of the darkened room, "Why do you love me?" And his dad, thoroughly confused, responds, "Because Kyle is his son." But when he finally sees his son's current condition, he knows the obvious solution to all of this is to take him to the doctor to see if he can get a referral for a face transplant or something. Cut to them at a surgery center. Kyle's perched on an examination table while his dad tells the physician, "It doesn't matter how dangerous it is. Just do whatever you have to do." Kyle's look is obviously unacceptable, and he calls his dad out on his "no cost is too great" attitude. But dad insists that he's misinterpreting him. He just wants what's best for his son. But don't you worry, Kyle, because hush, little baby, don't say a word. Papa's gonna buy you a mockingbird. And if that mockingbird don't sing, Papa's gonna buy a condo in Hoboken. And if that condo don't suit you, you probably haven't noticed a stellar view. And if that view don't make you smile, it won't matter, because Papa's gonna be gone a good long while.
Oh my gosh, that was amazing! Yay!
That's right. Daddy ditched Kyle to a waterfront property in Jersey, so Kyle has a view of New York City and doesn't have to deal with all the looky-loos because of his appearance. Dad tells him, "I may just also get you that motorcycle that you always wanted." When Kyle asks if he's keeping the apartment in New York City, Dad admits, "Yeah, but just for, you know, when I have to work late nights." But we all see that Kyle's room is fully decked out and his dad's room is virtually empty with the mattress up against the wall. Kyle can read the writing on the wall. If you didn't already get the hint from my beautiful song stylings, he's being ditched. But don't worry, gentle listeners. He's leaving Kyle with Zola the housekeeper, who actually seems to be a quality human being. But being ditched by your dad is still yikes.
Yeah. And, you know, nothing says I love you unconditionally like, okay, you just need to give my child a face transplant.
Yes. Oh, you can't do it? Okay, well, I'm going to stick you in the deep recesses of Jersey. And son, don't worry. I love you. I'm never going to be here, but you're going to get that Ducati you always wanted, huh?
Yeah. Huh? And I'll even get you a helmet. See, he does.
Yes. And then Zola's going to be here to tend to all of your wants and needs. Non-sexually, yay. Of course.
Yes. Ew, no.
Yay.
And Zola is not getting paid enough. I don't know how much she's getting paid, but she's not getting paid enough.
Oh, I would say she gets free room and board, like can live in that lavish apartment, even though it is on the Jersey side. Like it's an opulent, like fucking fantastic apartment to stay there for free and get paid all the monies. So she's not paying rent. She's not having to pay for food. And then she's getting paid for sitting there being his 24/7 babysitter and companion.
Yay. To like the sulkiest, like kind of shittiest guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Good times. Good times.
Yeah. Sign me up. Where can I apply?
I think you'd be great at dealing with that bullshit.
No, I wouldn't. I would probably put up with all of an hour and a half of it and be like, fuck you, I'm out. I don't care if they're paying me six figures to sit here and with you. You're a dick and have fucking fun trying to go grocery shopping looking like that.
Oh, this next section I call Love Me Some Neil Patrick Harris. And his role is kind of funny, but he's also shit as a blind person. He does a terrible job being, quote, blind.
But he is the surliest blind man I've ever seen in a movie, I think. He's got some tood.
He does have tood. He's got some humor. Appreciate the humor. Time passes, and as far as everyone else knows, Kyle is ostensibly in rehab for a really, really long time. And true to form, Dad is MIA, and Kyle is alone most of the time. The Leafs fall off his tree tattoo, and one day he hears a knock on the door. And this movie was made before Amazon was the shopping end-all and be-all that it is now. So who the fuck is at the door? Kyle looks through the peephole and sees Doogie Howser. Yay!
He's going to come give him a face transplant?
Yes! Yes! It's going to be perfect. I mean, Neil Patrick Harris, who is playing Will, the live-in tutor his dad hired for him. However, Kyle isn't in the mood. When is he ever in the mood, though, really?
True.
He says, tell my father he can carpe diem in hell. Will smirks. Happy to. Meanwhile, how about you cage the rage and invite me in for a nice hot bowl of dad sucks? Kyle snidely responds, saw right through that one, huh, Oprah? Will responds, yep, it's a gift, especially since I can't see. And Will has played all the right cards because Kyle opens the door for him. Will has surprisingly small suitcase for moving in somewhere, but hey, at least it's cute and vintage looking, right?
I read that and I was like, oh, my mind's going in so many different directions. Will, the blind tutor that sees fit to only walk around the house in his Speedos, his thong Speedos, because he doesn't give a fuck. He needs to be comfortable and no, he doesn't have to look at himself. So everybody else has to.
I think Kermit had a better suitcase in the Muppets Take Manhattan. I'm like,
wow.
Yes.
Throwback. You're suitcase shaming Corinne. You're really suitcase shaming.
I am.
Him?
I'm suitcase shaming Will, who has like an extensive wardrobe of ties and button down shirts. And I'm guessing he got like an armoire of like one of those box armoires delivered to the house.
For sure.
Yeah.
Full of thong speedos
for going around the house and
all
just
occasions.
Jiggling around like Borat in a Speedo. Yes, all occasions. He's got one Speedo that has like little fig leaves, fall leaves, maple leaves on it for fall. And then like another with Christmas tree lights for Christmas time. And you would think that it might be turkeys that are on the Thanksgiving one, but no. He goes for the full-on cornucopia. Thank you very much.
Oh, with the gourds strategically placed. So they are just accentuating his junk in the right ways. That's really cool. See, so like his Speedos can change seasons just like Kyle's tattoo starts changing.
Exactly.
Like they can be in sync. Yeah. They can totally be in sync with each other.
They compare, you know, Kyle holds out his forearm. He's like, all right, I've got Christmas tree lights on my forearm tree, and I see that you're wearing Christmas tree light Speedos. We are in sync, my bro.
And look at this. Plink, they light up. Huh? And they're evergreen scented. Do you want to come over and sniff them?
Ew! He is supposed to be a high schooler. No. No, we do not sniff
the evergreen scented. I forgot. Sorry.
So, Will tries to shake Kyle's hand, but Kyle greets him instead by ranting at him about his situation, telling Will that Zola will fill him in on everything and, oh yeah, please stay as long as you like and gouge my dad for all he's worth. Kyle leaves Will in the entryway and Will is impressed. He's like, I haven't met hostility like that in quite a while. Later, Kyle has the news paused on his TV. A freeze frame of his dad fills the screen. Zola comes by to pick up an empty pizza box, and Kyle asks her, "How old are your kids?" She says, 15, 13, and 10. He asks how she could leave her kids, and she responds, "There's a hole in my heart where they should be. I wasn't able to get them visas. Parents do what they know how to do, and I think your dad will come around eventually." Kyle is dubious, and when Zola leaves the room, he calls his dad, leaving a message saying, "I know we're supposed to reschedule us getting together, but you can do me a favor instead and stop pretending." He hangs up the phone. Kyle is not doing well. And I know this is an audio medium, but everybody who thinks Kyle's dad will come around and start visiting him while he looks like that, raise your hand. Tamara, I don't see you raising. Oh, you're raising your hand?
Half-ass.
Oh.
It's a half-ass raise.
Almost nobody raised their hand. Tamara raised it partway.
I'm being kind of optimistic. He can have, like, do some soul searching and realize how much he misses his son. And he's really not that bad. Not that bad.
Because, like, he spends so much quality time with his son when he was good looking.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fair. Yeah. Fair point. Fair. Yeah. In the next scene, Kyle tears through the streets like a dick on his motorcycle until he ends up coming across a Halloween party. And it's a perfect time of year for him. Because he can blend. And who should he run into at the party but Kendra? He begs her, "I've learned my lessons. 5 months is enough." But Kendra is not impressed as she dances around him indifferently. "You've learned nothing. Find someone who can see better than you. You have 7 more months," as she disappears into the crowd. He goes into a different section of the party and sees his ex-girlfriend Sloane making out with the guy who was his sidekick. Kyle forgets himself and calls out, "Sloane!" And then realizes, "Oh shit, I'm not pretty anymore!" And quickly ducks back, throwing his hood over his head. Sloane looks around and says to sidekick guy, "That sounded like Kyle. I know I should be writing him back, but I just don't have it in me. Also, it's kind of a relief not having him around. I felt like I always had to be on and mean to entertain him. With him gone, I feel like I could be more myself." Sidekick guy agrees, and Kyle dramatically kicks something, almost hitting Lindy, who's dressed up as a hippie, and I personally think she's had a few tokes during the party. She exclaims, "Hey!" And he responds, "Sorry." She then moves on to why she was there in the first place, remarking offhandedly to him as she watches Lindy and sidekick guy make out. "Unbelievable!" He comments, "Doesn't she have a boyfriend?" And Lindy Lucy responds, "Yeah. And you know that guy Lindy was talking about? They're way off. I respect that Kyle called things as he saw them. I mean, he was totally wrong, but he was true to himself. But what I really liked about him was that he was a shot of life." She shifts back to the couple making out. Whatever happened to romance? Long-form letters, talking all night, wooing, not... She gestures at the couple, whatever they're doing. She lazily drops her linen-style sunglasses, and once she leaves, he picks them up. So she's just like, this whole little thing that she goes on about Kyle. He was true to himself in a shot of life. And I'm like, a bad shot? Like, would you want to spend the rest of your days with somebody like that? Like, even if they were intolerably honest and surprising, like, yeah. She's seeing through some Lennon rose-colored glasses at his hotness is making everything that he does seem like, oh my god, it's so like fascinating and deep and almost so himself. And no, girl, no.
In only a way that like high school eyes can do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I remember watching My So-Called Life and Jordan Catalano, the guy that Angela had the crush on. I was like, he's so dreamy. And then I watched a little bit of My So-Called Life in my 30s. And I was like, oh my God, Jordan Catalano is an asshole. But
as is the case with most things from our childhood, like My So-Called Life, the 80s, essentially, like all of those things that you loved and adored. When you look back on them, you're like, oh shit, that was not great.
Yeah. So far, Kyle hasn't done any learning, but his blind teacher, Will, has dispensed a bit of knowledge to him. When Kyle tried to point out that Will cared about what people thought of him because he put so much care into how he dresses. He's wearing a button-down shirt and a tie, for fuck's sake. Who wears a tie? Anywho, Will refutes this. I don't dress this way for other people. I dress this way because I like the way it makes me feel.
Oh, yeah. Having a piece of fabric stifling your neck 24/7. Oh, that's, I love that. So comfortable.
Maybe he's into autoerotic asphyxiation. I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah. Just got to be careful with doing that kind of thing. Just saying, that's all. Days pass and Kyle is reflecting on this piece of knowledge. He decides to take down his MySpace page, which stated his interests and his about me. We'll find out what those are after the break. And we're back. Let's take a moment and think about what possibly could Kyle's interests and his about me be. Any guesses?
I'm sure they're all very, like, authentic and heartfelt and selfless.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, yeah. His about me, I spend all my time volunteering in the local food pantry.
I think you misread it here because, Corinne, you wrote anything bangable.
Interests.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, food banks, you know, 4-H. I can definitely see him doing 4-H. Possibly some Habitat for Humanity.
Yes.
Maybe a little Peace Corps, like a Peace Corps guy. Really strikes me as like that kind of vibe.
Yeah, totally.
Or everything opposite of all of those things.
Where we move behind his interest of anything bangable to his about me of...
Oh, hate fatty cakes, guts with butts. Oh, honey, that is, that's written across a t-shirt that I'm wearing this very moment. No, not the hate fatty cakes. It just says fatty cakes, guts with butts and hearts, because that is me to a T.
Aww. Well, it looks very cute on you. And I like how there's like little glitter action with it as well. So I appreciate that you added a little sparkle to it.
And if you look closely, the hearts are actually made out of little butts on top. So it's not a true heart. It's a little heart. It kind of turns into a butt. So it's, yeah, just the little details that count.
I would totally wear a shirt like that. Your shirt idea is genius.
Thank you.
I love your details. He is starting to metamorphize when MySpace asks him why he's deleting his account. He states, I am no more. Because if he were to create a new MySpace page under interests, it would say, hanging out on darkened city streets and stalking Lindy, but not in a super creepy way, just slightly creepy way.
Yeah, it's like the right amount of stalking. Like
yeah.
The hot stalking.
Yeah, exactly.
It hasn't gotten to problematic yet.
No.
Because it never does. Like, yeah. You can just hot stalk somebody for a little while and just absolutely nothing happens. It's not troubling or dangerous at all.
He's being very respectful about it.
By being very respectful, you mean like she doesn't know he's there. So it's like not invading her personal space per se.
Yeah.
Oh. Got it.
And under about me, it would say, ditched by my dad and creating a new unconventional family with housekeeper Zola and blind in-house teacher Will.
You found family.
Yeah. Mm. I think it's a way better family than his dad.
Dad. Seriously.
Bless his heart.
Serious. And his mom, too.
Yes.
Even though she comes up very briefly, far, far down in the movie, I'm like, oh, she kind of sucked as well.
I know. And I was like, I kind of don't blame her for running away, way, way. But why didn't she take her child with her?
Oh, my God. I know. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, don't even talk to me about him. Get a little sensitive about my mother leaving me multiple times and being like, yeah, you stay here with your dad. But mom, I'm a fucking delight. God damn it.
You are.
Seriously. Next, we see Kyle sitting down to a meal with Zola and Will. And when he's questioned about why he came in so late the night before, he reveals that there's a girl. Zola and Will are thrilled, but Kyle tempers their enthusiasm. I'm just a stalker. No, he didn't say that. He says, I haven't done anything about it yet. Will cleverly responds, oh, maybe you should open up with, what's up? Kyle is not on board, but Will doesn't care. Baby steps, we must celebrate. And next thing we know, Will and Kyle are on the roof hitting golf balls into the water or the bay that's below him because he's in a skyrise apartment right on the water, of course, because he's the Richie Rich.
Uh-huh.
And with each hit of the ball into the water, Will excitedly exclaims, "What's up?" Actually getting a laugh out of Kyle for like the first time since he's been beastly, I guess. Since he's been beastified.
Ooh.
One of the evenings that Kyle is watching Lindy, she's at home in her apartment that faces out onto the street. She calls out to her dad, but he's not there. She quickly exits the apartment, pissed, and goes into the alley to see her dad being held at gunpoint by a drug dealer. Let's call this drug dealer Stanley for this little scene.
Thank you, Tara. I really appreciate that.
Yes. Uh-huh. And I don't care if they do look like they're Vato Locos Por Vida and their name should be Juan and like Jose. I'm going to call him Stanley because fuck that shit. Let's call him Stanley, who he owes money to. Lindy tries to talk the dealer down, but he's insistent. And Kyle, from the shadows, finally moves from his role as a spectator into participant. He climbs the alley fence, leaping onto the dealer and knocking the gun out of his hand. In the scuffle, Lindy falls down some stairs and is knocked out cold. Kyle picks her up and takes her into the foyer of the apartment building, setting her down gently and putting a book under her head. And then Kyle hears a gunshot from outside and finds that Lindy's dad has killed one of the dealers. We'll call him Percy with his gun. But Percy was Stan's brother. Stanley witnessed the whole thing and now is thirsty for revenge. He wants Lindy's life in exchange for the death of Percy! Avenge Percy! Kyle knocks the gun out of Lindy's dad's hand and gets Stanley to vamoose. Lindy's dad asks the vigilante Kyle, "What do you want from me?" Kyle pauses a moment and then says, "I want Lindy. I want to keep her safe." Her dad protests, "I can protect her." Kyle quickly snaps a photo of Lindy's dad and the dead body with this phone, stating, "You can't keep her safe, but I can. And if you don't give her to me, I'll share these pictures with the police." Lindy's dad doesn't like it, but ultimately he goes along with it. So Kyle has blackmailed himself into getting a hostage friend. Yay!
That's really the best way to make friends, right?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Absolutely. Uh-huh. That or buying their love, both hand in hand, work famously.
I highly recommend hot dogs and red vines.
Or cupcakes with your own name on them.
Yes. The next day, Kyle has filled in Zola and Will that they are getting a guest and to call him Hunter instead of Kyle. But this doesn't really become an issue because we never really hear the name Hunter used except for twice, maybe. So I'm going to continue calling him Kyle.
I did have a moment where I was trying to script out some things and I was trying to merge the Kyle and Hunter.
I know.
Together.
No, it's not good.
And they kept coming up with Hunter. And I'm like, no, Hunter's. I mean, it's kind of fitting and it works, but no.
I tried doing it too, and the only one that made sense was Hunter, and I was like, I don't think that's a good idea, and it is fitting, so maybe it was a good idea, but regardless.
Maybe. But Hunter sounds too much like Hunter. I think that's the problem.
That also is a problem.
I was like toying around with Kylenter. No. That's just, it's a tongue twister. No.
And I entitle this section, "Kyle's guardians are surprisingly chill about him kind of taking Lindy hostage."
I mean, what can you say to basically your employer?
Right.
He's not directly their employer, but they're like, yeah, it's a big place. What's one more person?
They're like, okay, so you have blackmailed this girl's dad into dropping her off and we're keeping her here and you're going to be somebody else. And right, this is totally aligns with my value. Yes, let's do this thing.
Well, I mean, if they're okay with him being a stalker,
true,
this is kind of like a short jump, hop, skip and a jump from stalker status, so you know, maybe they're just that kind of people. Will likes to asphyxiate himself while he's wearing his thong Speedo, and I haven't really found anything wrong with Zola yet, but I'm sure it'll come.
Zola's amazing.
Yeah. Well, she's still okay with him getting a hostage and moving her in, so there's got to be some holes in that good,
yes,
good reputation, demeanor, the goodness that is Zola.
She knows it's a means to an end, and so I think that she's hoping that it'll, you know, help him get that I love you. But it's not like she's Sebastian from The Little Mermaid and starting like, la, 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 you know you got to kiss the girl.
Maybe she's Mrs. Potts. She's Mrs. Potts.
Does that make Will Chip? No, no.
No, because her kid's back in Jamaica. Oh, her right, chips. Right. We just haven't met him yet.
Yeah. Chippy 1, Chippy 2, and Chippy 3. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Zola answers the door and Lindy's dad delivers Lindy to the house, but she's not happy about it at all.
What?
She's not happy about it? Shocker. Her dad insists, I'm trying to keep you safe. You just need to spend some time here with the son of an old friend. Lindy insists, I can take care of myself. Her dad offers to come see her, but she's not having it. I have given up my life, school, friends, everything because of you. Just stay away. She turns her back on her dad and he admits, I keep screwing up. I know that, but I don't know what else to do. Stop doing drugs, Dad. Sorry. Lindy says, back still turned, just leave. And she walks away with tears in her eyes. Zola brings Lindy's suitcase inside and closes the door on Lindy's dad. Lindy states loudly into the house, I'm here. You happy? You come near me, though, and I'll taser your ass. And Kyle, who has been watching everything from between some stair railings, may be questioning some of his decisions. Later, up in his room, he looks at Lindy's social media, and the banner at the top of the page next to her picture states, is in hell. He mutters to himself, well, that makes two of us. She apparently has some kind of attic room, which she won't leave. He leaves food outside her door, wearing a balaclava, but he doesn't need to worry about her seeing him, because she isn't going to open the door with him around. He begs her, outside her door, to let him explain, but nothing. He brings her a gift, knocking on the door, quickly running off. She opens the door, opens the package, and in it is a giant red designer purse with a gold chain handle.
It's ugly. It's yes. Very ugly.
It's very ugly. Cuteness factor, 0.
-2.
Yeah. Expense factor, probably could pay my rent for several months. But, you know, I'm not selling it. Well, I would sell it if I had that purse, because who wants that purse? But, yes. She scoffs at the purse, dropping the bag back into the package. This is not the path to Lindy's heart. However, he is a dense motherfucker and tries again with a designer gift. When this too is rejected, he tries sending Zola out again for some kind of fancy gift, but she stops him. You know she's not the type who can be bought. Kyle insists, I'm not trying to buy her, and she gives him the, you need to take a look at the man in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Look, but she follows that look up with, you need to give her something that has meaning for her. You know her. Think about what she'd like. Kyle reflects and finally comes up with a gift that will work. A case of Juju fruits.
Because when he was stalking her one night, he saw her like walking into the dangerous evening to the bodega to buy a box of Jujubes, which are not good. Of all the candy, of all the candy.
Yeah, she comes out with a box of them and a cup of coffee in that like classic New York to-go cup container.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the dinner of champions.
Yes. He dons his balaclava, aka ski mask, opens her door and slowly starts ascending the steps into her room. However, he stops when he realizes that she's on the phone. She's lamenting to a friend about her situation. I know it's for my own good, but this ruins everything. I've been saving up for years for my Machu Picchu trip. The one thing I was going to do for me, and now... Kyle makes a noise and Lindy quickly gets off the phone and gives a startled yell. Ah! She runs over to the stairs and Kyle quickly retreats, defensively exclaiming, Jesus, what's your problem? She counters, I am not Jesus, my child. She counters, what's with the mask? He replies, I didn't want to freak you out. And she says, right, because wearing a ski mask isn't creepy at all. And why am I even here? Kyle reiterates to keep her safe, blah, blah, blah. And then he says, your dad wanted someone they couldn't trace you to. Your dad cares so much about you. He just kept saying how much he loved you and how he didn't want to lose you. He had a different conversation with the dad than we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Although her dad was just like, I don't feel entirely comfortable with this. That's what her dad was like.
So in Kyle's interpretation, it's, I love her and I want to keep her safe.
Yeah.
When he in actuality said, fuck no, she's not going with you.
Yeah.
So.
And then Kyle was like, I can get her a face transplant. And he was like, oh, well, that's a different story entirely.
Why would she need a face transplant? So they can match?
No, so she wouldn't be recognized.
Oh, yeah. That's a horrible idea. Of all the faces, Vanessa Hudgens has a good one. I wouldn't change that shit. I don't care.
No, she's got a really good one. And her dad wouldn't be down for her to get a face transplant either. Because he does love her. He does care about her. But, you know,
yes. Yeah.
Parents are humans and they have problems too. And unfortunately, Lindy's dad has a bunch of problems.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the parents in a lot of our movies have a lot of problems.
And yet he is still more sympathetic of a character than Kyle's dad.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
Lindy, hearing that her dad cared so much about her, softens her a bit. And then Kyle follows up with, I got you jujubes. And he shoves the box towards her and then retreats down the stairs. When he runs into Zola, he thanks her profusely for the thinking thing.
Right, because it's such an original idea to think of what the girl likes and then use that to get her to like you back.
Well, you know, if throwing money at it doesn't work, then maybe, yeah, you should try to do the thinking thing.
Or just throw jujubes at her, whichever.
You know, like, I'm sure you're just like, oh, I just randomly give you some Manolo Blahniks and you're like, thanks, they're not even my size, and I don't wear heels like this.
Then I take them and I sell them, just like you said.
See? And then you have your rent paid for a couple of months. It's all good.
And choo-choo, Kyle is on the thinking train. He takes pen to paper and starts writing her long-form letters, reiterating the thoughts that she unknowingly shared with him during the Halloween party. A fountain of original thoughts he is not. He checks out her socials and is relieved that her status is not, in spite of my rage, I am still just a rat in a cage. Instead, it inexplicably says, Lindy's thinking about amazy crazy roses. This inspires Kyle, who while hanging out with Will in the living room, confides that he's going to build a greenhouse on the roof so he can grow roses for Lindy. Will is unimpressed and even talks a little bit of shit, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. He's basically like, what kind of a man are you? One that sleeps with stuffed animals? I was like, fuck off, Will.
Yeah. Then Will hears a noise, and Kyle quickly hides behind the curtain. When Lindy enters the room, she introduces herself to Will and notices the hockey game on the TV. And apparently she's a Rangers fan. What? Lindy points to the tools and materials propped up in the room, asking, what are all the tools for? Will muses, Hunter, a.k.a. Kyle, Cunter, is going to build a structure on the roof. Lindy asks, a structure for what? And Will responds, you ever see the 1954 classic film Devil Girl from Mars, where they abduct virginal teenage girls for breeding stock? There's absolutely no response from Lindy, and Will quickly backpedals. Joke. It was a joke. Sorry. I've been a bit too isolated for too long and have lost my social graces. Hunter is going to build a greenhouse. Lindy nods her head and smiles a little and says, cool. And Cunter, who is still in hiding, smiles at her reaction, while Will pukes a little in his mouth because he thought the greenhouse idea was so stupid.
I just love how, let's tell this young teenage girl who we have in the house, basically kidnapped here for a reason for building something, abducting virginal teenage girls for breeding stock. That's going to make me feel super safe and secure at this place with strangers when I'm like, why am I even kind of here in the first place? Yeah.
Yeah. Will, bad joke, Will. Bad joke.
Bad joke.
He should have just instead said, be our guest, be our guest, put our service to the test.
Oh, Lumiere, Will, beautiful.
So there's a montage of Kyle building a greenhouse. Woohoo! Then we move to a different season. One evening, Kyle is in the living room and he looks up at the tree tattoo on the inside of his forearm, and it lights up with Christmas lights and a gold star on top. The seasons are a changing.
Doesn't he say something to Kendra like "fuck off"?
Yeah, he's just like, "Oh, you're such a fucking joker!" Like, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Kyle turns on the TV and watches a Korean drama. Lindy comes downstairs and stands behind him in the doorway. She asks, "So, are we ever going to properly meet?" Kyle gruffly responds, "No." She pauses a beat and asks, "So, you live here all your life?" He responds, "No, I moved here pretty recently. I was living with my dad, but he's the kind of guy that can't deal." Lindy sarcastically responds, "Wouldn't know anything about that." She then asks, "What about your mom?" She pauses and he doesn't respond, so she does. "Mine's dead, and I have a screwed up dad too. Too bad we have nothing in common." She glances up at the TV and says, "What's with the Korean TV? You speak Korean?" He glibly replies, "Oh yeah." The mom just totally said, "Bon appetit." Lindy scoffs at this, approaches the back of the couch, and they end up bonding by making up goofy English dubs of what the two characters on screen are saying. And this movie was done in 2011, and if it were done in the 80s, this would have been racist as fuck, and I guarantee you it is not. It plays just fine. It's not racist at all. It's just fine. Their conversation, not all that interesting, which is why I didn't transcribe it, but but yes. When Kyle and Lindy see the two people who they thought were mother and son exchange a kiss on the lips, they suddenly stop and burst into laughter. Lindy jokingly says, "I hope Will isn't your Korean teacher." And Kyle responds somberly with another question, "Do you miss school?" Lindy rolls her eyes at herself while she looks at the back of Kyle's hooded head. "Yeah, I know I'm such a dork, but I totally do." Kyle responds, "If you want, you can go to class with me." Lindy smiles, "Yeah, I'd love to. Tomorrow?" Kyle nods, and Lindy is about to excitedly head upstairs when Kyle asks her, "Wait." She turns back into the room, and he stands up, slowly turning around and removing his hood. She stares, he stares, they stare. And he says, "Pretty gruesome, huh?" She responds with a slight smile, "I've seen worse," and heads upstairs to her room.
The next morning, Kyle wakes up Will, announcing to him, "We're having a class today, but you have to make me look like we've been having class all along." Huh. Will is bleary-eyed, having been woken up, but responds, "Okay, I'll make it work." To which Kyle responds, "That's not good enough. I need to know what we'll be doing so I can sound smart." Will smugly says, "That would be cheating." And they end up settling on going over the poem, "Having a Coke with You" by Frank O'Hara. Will asks Kyle, "How do you know about this poem?" And Kyle says, "Oh, I Googled poems to impress girls with." Because of course he did. Will agrees to the poem, but refuses to help Kyle with insight into it so that he'll look smart in front of Lindy. Kyle hurries off to Zola, asking her for another thinking thing to give to Lindy, but she encourages him to just be himself. Kyle asks, "The self I am now or the one I used to be?" To which Zola answers, "The one I've always known you to be in your heart." Zola is giving him a whole lot more grace than I would.
Uh-huh.
Especially after all the abuse she probably got heaped onto her before we even met them.
Yeah, and she's only been working for them at most for 5 years because that's when she came over here from Jamaica. So, as like what he's, say he's 16 or maybe 17. So 12. It was when, you know, when she met him.
Yeah. Now you may have some questions at this point. And I'm not talking about the ones like, why doesn't Will leave? Are Zola and Will having a torrid affair? Why would Lindy seem to be warming up to this guy whose house she's kind of being held captive in? Is Lindy going to ask Kyle if his look is accidental or a conscious choice? I mean, look at the stars of today. Like I've said before, Post Malone.
Yes.
Or that guy 6ix9ine. They take one look at Kyle and ask when his new album is dropping, and then bite his fashion, rush out and get questionably placed septum piercings and call it the new fashion trend. But no, these aren't the questions I'm talking about. I mean, the questions that we're referring to, the really important biting questions are, where is class going to be held and does Will actually teach it? The answers are in the greenhouse, which is now almost the size of the roof and filled with beautiful flowering roses. And no, Will is actually barely there, hardly teaching, and ultimately gets whisked away a few minutes in by Zola. So Kyle and Lindy can romantically read the Getting a Coke with You poem back and forth to each other. And we see a montage-ish thing of time passing where the roses die and reblossom and the snow falls and dries up. And through the poem, we have arrived at the doorsteps of spring. And by this point, Kyle and Lindy are making heart eyes at each other. However, Kyle knows he needs more time to seal the deal with her. Not just sex, but just to have her fall in love with him and for them to share a kiss. So he goes to find Kendra again and waits outside her place. When she finally emerges, he begs her for more time, but she explains that she can't change a spell. He dramatically kicks the wall, as he's wont to do, and she adds, "Plus, you haven't changed. You only care about yourself." Kyle protests, "I care about Lindy, who isn't safe at home, Zola, who separated from her family, and Will, who can't see. Is there anything you could do for them? I care about that more than anything." She eyes him suspiciously and says, "If you break the spell, I will help them. And I'm hoping this isn't just some kind of monkey's paw bargain, but I do believe that Kendra is more of a good witch that just happens to be chaotic good."
Oh, gosh. It's like, he loves to kick. Will is like, he loves to kick. I like to kick.
That should be his like social media profile. I like to kick things. Cans, walls, people when they're down.
Are you a butt face? I can kick you. Yeah. No, exactly.
Do you have a butt and a gut? I can kick you.
Or kick in front of you. I can dramatically kick in many situations. Available for hire. This next section I call, I will try to fix you. But you really shouldn't, because it's a very bad idea.
Oh my God, for a good couple of years, that was my theme song with my ex.
Uh-huh.
Right before we left Pacifica, I believe.
Oh, I have lived that theme song as well.
Mm-hmm.
And have fixed many a guy that I have broken up with, and they've done so much better after they've left my tutelage so that they would be better partners for somebody else.
Yeah, as they're leaving your relationship, you're just like internally telling the next girl, "You're welcome."
Yeah.
Fucking you're welcome. Yeah. You don't even know. Did not come out of the box like this.
No.
Okay.
When Kyle gets home, he goes upstairs to Lindy's room. He brought her CDs. Lindy's computer is open and her social media status is, "Motherfucker, I tell you, the way Lindy, no way in fucking hell would she do this kind of spelling." Her social media status is, "I miss my life." And it's spelled the letter I, M-I-S space, M-Y space, L-Y-F. Mm. I'm like,
she was trying to text before texting was cool.
Oh. She rushes over to her computer to close her social media page, only to reveal the picture of her and Kyle at the dance as her computer background. A picture that Kyle has often looked at on his very own computer. She stumbles around trying to be nonchalant and absolutely failing. "That's just some guy from my school, kind of an asshole, but we were on a committee together, which is why I have this picture." Kyle also absolutely fails at being nonchalant. "Well, he doesn't suck looks-wise." Lindy scoffs. "Oh yeah, he knew it. And of course, handsome jerks are so attractive to me. Not that I fell for him. No, I'm fine." She pauses and says, "Every once in a while you remind me of him. Not that you're an asshole," she reflects. "You know, when we spoke that one time, I almost had the feeling he liked me." Kyle chimes in, "Of course he did." Lindy questions this. "I don't think so. He was on the in and I was / am not." Kyle responds, "That's why I like you." Lindy looks at him and smiles, saying, "Same." She waxes a bit more nostalgic about how she lives to save a bad boy, practically breaking out into, "And I will try and fix you." Kyle asks her if she wants to go out somewhere with him, and she's game.
It's nighttime, and they're walking the city streets. Lindy states, "The only time I was out this late in the city was when I was looking for my dad, with a can of mace in my hand." Kyle chuckles. "Well, fortunately, you don't need mace with me. You have the scary guy walking right next to you." And where does the scary guy want to take his captive? To an evil lair? To a tattoo artist so they can get matching tree tattoos? Ooh. No! They're going to the zoo. And when we get to the entrance, which was interesting because you would think of a zoo being much different than this zoo was, because this zoo's basic entrance was like this huge building. So the zoo's inside. Anyways, they get into the entrance and Kyle leans in closer to her and whispers, "You hear that? The animals. Water lapping? In a nearby street, a man is whispering, 'I love you.'" Lindy responds, "Do you hear that?" Kyle asks, "What?" So she says, "Somewhere there's a baboon scratching his ass." He chuckles and they proceed into the zoo building through an open window. It's just that easy.
Yeah.
He takes her to a room where a video is showing on a continuous reel and they sit while Kyle divulges. "When I was 5, one day my dad says, 'I'll take you wherever you want to go.' So we went to the zoo and he bought me all the candy and all the toys I could ever want. And then he sat me down and told me that my mom had left us and she wouldn't be coming back." See, this is why his mom sucks also. Uh-huh. And why she didn't want to take Kyle with them, we'll never know.
Yes.
Unless
yes.
Daddy killed mom and then just said that your mommy went away forever and she's not coming back. Sorry.
Right.
She's on the bottom of the Hudson River.
Uh-huh. And she could have gained like 10 lbs. And, you know, he couldn't be seen walking around with that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. And when he told her to lose weight, she got offended. Yeah. And so he killed her.
He's like, "Don't you understand? This is the only way to be." And she's like, "I am taking my child." And he's like, "I will not have an uggo like you raising my child." Yes.
We've solved the mystery. Wow.
There's like a Lifetime movie within this movie. I had no idea. Thank you for unveiling it, Tamara.
But sadly, Kyle knows none of this. So when his dad falsely said that his mom was leaving and never coming back, he ran away from his dad, upset, and ended up in this very room, in this zoo, watching this video of an elephant mom whose 2 children died in the midst of a long migration. The next year on the herd's way back, the elephant mom found her children's bones and stayed with them. Kyle asks, "Can you imagine a love like that?" Lindy places her head on top of his and they sit together in companionable silence. Ultimately, they go back to the house, sit on a rooftop bench, and watch the streetlights turn off one right after the other. She curls up and lays her head on his lap and falls asleep. And he gently brings her down into her room and sees that the Machu Picchu trip is just a few days away for her. I've never understood this where girls can just like fall asleep on guys and they can pick her up and like take them down to bed like they're a 5-year-old. It's like if somebody leans on me heavily or like turns in bed, I'm like, what are you doing? What's going on? So I'd never be the cute little girl that you can just scoop up in your arms and whisk away. I'd probably accidentally deck you in the face.
It's because they're pretending to be asleep because they want to be carried down into the bed. And that like zoo moment encapsulates a lot of my feelings about this movie. Like they go to the outside of the zoo. There's like some nice little witty banter before that. And I thought it was like pretty nicely written. They get to the outside of the zoo. And then suddenly they're going through an open window in the zoo? ? Like how yeah. they get into the zoo doesn't make sense. And this also like resonates with me about a lot of the different plot ? Throughout this movie. And then there's this scene that's really beautiful about like the elephant visiting the mom and the bones and everything like that. And that's like really sweet and tender. Can you imagine a love like that? And it's like, wow. And they both are kind of wondering what is that kind of love, because their parents are both have their own things that they're struggling with that prevent them from being the kind of parents that one might want to have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's really beautiful. But there's all this other stuff around the beautiful stuff that's just like, huh? wait, what?
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You know.
Yes, I get that. I totally get that. And I agree. That's not a zoo. That's like a natural history museum. What the fuck? That's what they should have said it was. You don't know how zoos work, Kyle.
While Lindy sleeps, Kyle talks with Zola and Will about letting Lindy go to Machu Picchu. Oh, he gets to decide whether she goes to Machu Picchu or not.
Hot.
Right? I know. Like, yeah. We go back into the problematic parts of this movie.
Womp, womp, womp.
There we are again. Back in problematic
yes.
town. We were just on Beautiful Boulevard, and now we're back in problematic town.
Yeah. Should I let her have her own free will and go to Machu Picchu, this place where she'd always want?
I don't know. Maybe not.
Yeah.
But I need to protect her. I need to protect her and make sure she's safe.
Wait, that sounds like a familiar trope. Have we heard that before?
Starting to feel like an abusive relationship. I just need to make sure she's safe.
Uh-huh.
If she didn't wear those clothes, she'd be fine.
Uh-huh.
This is a trip she'd be safe on, but it would minimize his chances of transforming back into his former body. Will encourages him to let her go, and Zola mentions that he still has a chance with Lindy. Will suggests that Kyle whisk Lindy off to Daddy's castle somewhere. Kyle insists that there's no posh estate, just the lake house. Will facepalms himself. Seriously? A lake house? Why aren't you taking her there right now? And in a puzzling turn of events, we see Lindy and Kyle going to the lake house, but not on his motorcycle or in a car. No, they are going there in a limo? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Ha. On their ride to the lake house, Kyle sees a text pop up on Lindy's phone. Her dad lets her know it's okay to come home now because Victor has been arrested. They're no longer in danger. Kyle pretends
See, now, the Victor is supposed to be the gangster name, but, like, I figured it out, like, that's his street name.
Oh, so okay.
Stanley is his, like, real name, and Victor is his street name because it makes him sound more tough.
That would make you sound more tough than Stanley.
Mm-hmm. Some people go for, like, La Loca, or some people go for, like, Smiley and Puppet, but yeah. He went for Victor.
And Percy just stands alone, proud, with the Percy name.
Oh, no. Well, he's dead, so yeah. We don't know what his, like, street name was.
Yeah. Kyle pretends to sleep, and Lindy looks over at him, glances back at her phone, and deletes the text. Okay, the lake house? Why was it he put there in the first place? It's huge and posh and lovely. Kyle and Lindy go back out onto the porch where they can hang out and see the lake. And Kyle confesses that he loved coming out here as a kid. His dad could only tolerate it for about 45 minutes a visit because there was shitty cell phone reception. But Kyle soaked up all 45 of those minutes while the getting was good. Lindy shares that her dad was a teacher before her mom died and he had his downward spiral. Kyle asks, do you miss him? Lindy confesses, it's actually been a relief living away from my dad. I don't have to search for him when he goes missing or take care of him in any way. In some ways, being trapped at your house has been freeing for me. I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to go to Machu Picchu so badly. I wanted something that was mine, independent of him. Something I could experience without having to take him into consideration.
So I have a couple of theories. Uh-huh. So first theory why Kyle didn't go to the lake house immediately is because dad wanted to give the illusion that he would just be down the way and could just pop right in and see him anytime.
Yeah.
But also, fuck yeah, I agree with you on that lake house comment because when I was like, oh, the lake house, I pictured like a little quaint cabin.
Yeah.
Like made out of logs with maybe like three rooms, possibly an outhouse instead of a bathroom with like a little small dock and a rowboat like tied to it. And then when they pull up to it, I was like, are you fucking kidding me right now? It's like a palatial estate on the waterfront on a couple of acres. Jesus Christ.
I know. It's like the house in the Italian Hallmark movie that we saw where she's like, and here's my villa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They paid for it. It comes with the teaching job that I got. Okay, well, sign me up.
Yeah.
Kyle and Lindy go down to the lake, and as they walk alongside it, Kyle confesses that he's been writing something for Lindy. She says, let me see it. And he takes the paper out of his pocket. As she stumbles and starts to fall, he gracefully catches her, setting her down on the grass and stays poised above her. The kiss tractor beam is on when kisses interrupt us. Lindy's cell phone rings, and it's the hospital calling to let her know that her dad is there. He fucking OD'd. Kyle tells her, you have to go to him. And Lindy runs back towards the house. And I could not stop seeing the parallel scene from the freaking Disney movie where she sees her dad in the, like, crystal ball. And he's like, you have to go to him.
Oh,
I can't leave you. Yes, go. And apparently the lake house also houses a vintage two-seater sports car because that's what they drive to the train station. Kyle and Lindsay arrive just in time and she hops on the train, turns around and tells Hunter, a.k.a. Kyle, a.k.a. Cunter. As Kyle stares at her, hopefully, she tells him, you're a good friend.
Ouch! Oh.
Knife to the heart.
Oh.
Sorry about that, Kyle. However, much to Kyle's surprise, when she grabs a seat and knocks on the window to get his attention, he goes over and sees that she's got his love letters in her lap, and she's starting to read them. Eesh! He tries shouting after her as the train pulls away. Don't read those! Don't read those! But alas, he is drowned out by the train and Lindy's interest in reading the tome he has crafted.
Kyle's letter is a series of letters that he wrote to her every day since she had been staying at the house, and in it he confesses his love for her. Now, since she called him a friend, he obviously goes back to the house and becomes Broody McBroody Pants in spite of Lindy calling and leaving many messages for him in which she asks to talk to him. She also lets him know that her dad is going to be okay. I bet he's just like kicking a wall or something, because that's what he likes to do.
He's kicking all the things right now.
Mm-hmm. Including his own ass for being like, the. Anyways.
Just for being Kyle. For being so Kyle-like. For being so cunterly.
Mm-hmm. In the kitchen, Zola and Will chastise him for not returning Lindy's calls. Will says, she even called me. Why won't you talk to her? The last time I talked to her, she told me how hurt she was. And hurt is girl speak for call now, bonehead. Zola says, she didn't know what to do, so she went back to school to go on the trip. So surprisingly, Kyle makes his way to Buxton Academy High School, or as I like to call it, Bucky High, home of the Beavers.
Yeah.
He walks the halls with students that wince and turn away from Kyle when they see his face. He finds Lindy and stands behind her. Lindy knows to turn around when she sees her friend's face contort, and she does turn around to see what they're looking at. When she sees it's Kyle, she irately says, what are you doing here? Kyle explains that he was afraid that she didn't love him and that it wasn't possible to love him because of how ugly he is, so he didn't return her calls. He has the emotional maturity of like a five-year-old. He pauses for a moment, looking at her face, and then says, but I should have known better. That's not who you are, and when I'm around you, I don't feel ugly at all. She looks at him softly and says, because you're not. She gently takes off his hood, looking at him with the gentlest of love eyes, and strokes his face, pulling him in for a kiss. The announcement comes over the speakers for students to get on the bus to the airport for Machu Picchu. They hug, and he looks at his forearm tattoo as the last spring flower blooms fully on his arm. He says softly to her, nothing's going to change while you're gone, so go. He smiles at her and then says more firmly, go. And she starts walking off, but then stops, turns around and says, I love you, to him. He smiles softly at her and leaves the school feeling wonky. Because why would you say I love you back to her, Kyle? I mean, nothing makes a girl feel secure like professing her love to someone when he responds by turning around and leaving. Yay!
But see, he needed to hear I love you. There's nothing in the spell that says he has to say it back.
Right! Oh, thanks, Lindy. Yeah. Now that I got that from you, we're good. Catch you on the flip side.
And Cunter out. Once he stepped outside, he looks at his reflection in the school window and sees that he's transformed back to his full frat boy looking self. While he's marveling at this, Lindy bursts out of the school doors yelling, Hunter! Hunter! Searching up and down the street for him. Kyle tries talking to her, but she only gives him the briefest of hellos before running down the street.
Kyle falls after her saying, I met someone and she reminds me of you. She reminded me that love can change you. Do you believe that love can change you? Lindy keeps on rushing down the street and hastily responds, of course, thinking to herself, why is he telling me all of this? Cruiser. Kyle continues, then you'll believe me when I tell you about a guy who looked good on the outside but was ugly on the inside, and there was a curse, and love changed him. Lindy stops and says, everyone knows that story. She pulls out her phone, trying to call Hunter, and Kyle says, what if it wasn't a story? What if it were true? And the phone in Kyle's pocket starts ringing. She looks at him with the realization, because her phone is calling his phone when she's trying to get in touch with Hunter. Ooh. And she says softly, it was you. It was always you. He asks, can you imagine that love? Can you? And instead of shaking her fist at the sky and saying, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal! You lied to me for months and kept me captive, you motherfucker! She nods, looking dreamily up at him, her mouth softly saying, yeah, it's you. Her eyes saying, thank God I don't have to maneuver around that massive metal piercing you had in the middle of your nose anymore. And they kiss. Meanwhile, back at the house, Zola has received green cards for her family, and Will can see them, like literally see them. Dreams really do come true. Meanwhile, on the other side of the city, Kyle's dad is sitting importantly at his desk when his administrative assistant brings him some coffee and lets him know, your new intern's coming up the elevator. He spits out his gum, takes the coffee, and deposits the gum in his assistant's hand, saying, just as long as she's easy on the eyes. His assistant explains, well, she's a bit odd-looking, and he insists, no dog faces, no dumpy frumps. The assistant adds, her references said that no matter what you throw at her, she can always work her magic. And the elevator doors, bing, open, and we see Kendra's sweet-ass, chaotic, good witchy feet walk out. The end.
The end.
Woo!
The end.
The end. The end. Corinne, how many dry kisses do you give Beastly?
I've put some serious consideration into this.
Oh, you don't put serious consideration in anything else, so we do.
Just this. Well, you know, because it's my movie and I chose it, so therefore I give it serious consideration.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah.
All the other reviews are flippant. When it comes to your movies, Tamara, I give them flippant, half-hearted, not well thought out reviews.
Yes. No, that's not true at all. I give this 2.5 dry kisses. It has some really nice moments in it. It has some really good parts. It's also kind of fucked up movie, so it gets under 3.
Yeah.
But there are also some really strong parts to it. So it, yeah. So 2.5 dry kisses is where I stand with it. What about you?
Oh, I'm also going to have to give this a low score because in my opinion, I agree with you, beautiful moments, sweet moments, but swirled around a bunch of what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like the plot points didn't make sense in a lot of spots. The relationships weren't really fleshed out. It was just like one moment I hate you, the next moment I love you, and we're just supposed to believe it.
Yeah.
Which was just like, oh, okay, so we're friends. Oh, okay, we're family now. Oh, Kyle, the guy that treated you horribly for 3 years, now wants to make sure that your family gets here with the green card. Like, yes, it's understandable because they live together and he realized his dad was a douche.
Yeah.
But you don't get to see that. And sometimes this movie, I think, needed a lot more of that.
Yes.
So just it felt fragmented, pieced together, not entirely well. Yeah. So I'm just going to have to say 2 dry kisses, not terribly horribly bad, but not great.
Yeah, agree. I probably lean more towards 2 dry kisses as well, but I'll stick with 2.5. All right, so now that we have given our dry kiss rating, what movie do we have coming up next week, Miss Tamara?
Well, I'm going to throw you a curveball, Corinne, because I gave you all kinds of movie choices that I wanted to do that fell in line with our paranormal supernatural sweeties theme, but when I was looking for it, I saw the perfect movie to share with you next week. It is the Academy Award winning flick. No, I'm just kidding. It's the 80s cult classic Teen Witch.
Oh my gosh. I am so excited for the badness of this all. I cannot wait. And if you have anything you'd like to say about Teen Witch, Beastly, or whether the whole, you know, dynamic of fairy tales is meant to destroy our souls and create really bad
Jesus Christ.
Relationship dynamics between men and women. You can reach out to us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss, or email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com.
And that's spelled 1-O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us, we will offer you a shiny, one-of-a-kind, limited edition. I guess it's not one-of-a-kind because there's more than one. Anyways,
limited edition
One Dry Kiss sticker created by yours truly. That's right. All you have to do is pop a little 5-star rating there, and wherever you listen to this podcast, or leave us some kind words about how much you're enjoying our show, because we're enjoying doing it for you.
Yes.
And since it is it's Christmas for Corinne, it's Corinne's birthday month, we will bestow a sticker upon you as a gift from us for any ratings or reviews that you leave. But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Papa's gonna buy you a mockingbird. And if that mockingbird don't sing, Papa's gonna buy a condo in Hoboken. And if that condo don't suit you, you probably haven't noticed a stellar view. And if that view don't make you smile, it won't matter, 'cause Papa's gonna be gone a good long while.
Oh.